You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today I'm talking with Joseph Koechler. We're talking about his new book, Dragon at the Edge of a Flat World, Portraits and Revelations, and we're also talking about his music and performance. Joseph, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Brainerd.
Joseph, so there's your book, which I can't wait to talk about, and I know you'll be reading from, but also you have this amazing voice, right? 3+ octave operatic voice, and this is also your medium. So though we'll talk about both things and have samples of both things, maybe if you could just say which came first, the singing or the writing, and how do they, or if they do, interact, both the singing and the writing?
Well, I guess in terms of interaction, you know, I mostly, although I have some background in, you know, in opera and have a kind of a theatrical voice that way, I mostly create my own material and write the music and the words to my material and then perform it. So those things interact within my work in that way. And as far as which came first, I guess for me, in one way, it's the same thing. It's you know, language and the voice for me, it's more on a spectrum. So it's not that they are so separated. But in terms of my trajectory, I did a lot of visual art as a kid, and then I went to school to become a visual artist, but then ended up kind of straying and training both as a singer and then doing all this writing, but not in such a structured way, just more under the auspices of performing. And eventually
and
synthesize
so let's,
everything.
Let's talk about you're on a book tour now, right? You're going around, you're reading from the book. When you do the book tour, are you also singing or performing while in between reading?
Yes, I am. You know, and I'm not used to it because I'm used to just doing more performing where I'm singing lately and everything's very heightened. But I have been doing these bookstore events, which are more intimate and sometimes well lit, and I don't know what people are thinking out there, but I kind of weave some video and some performance through the readings too, because there are a lot of interconnections. A lot of people who I'm writing about in the book are also actors in the videos, and you know, and then some of the stories or some of the songs that I sing are also in the book. I mean, there's one piece that's printed as sheet music in the book, and another one is kind of a libretto and so on. That's like, you know, an aria, but with nonsense language. But I have the translation. It's in English. So, yeah, so there are intersections within the book and in the way that I'm performing it.
So let's begin with a reading from the book or a song. Why don't we start with perhaps a reading for us? If you want to give us a small sample of the book, and then we'll play a song or two.
Okay. Well, you asked me to read maybe just the first paragraph, which is the introduction, and so that's what I will read. And this is called "My Life is a House on Fire." When I was 3, I watched my house burn down. It was the middle of Michigan winter after a blizzard. The lights had just come back on after a week-long power outage, and we were all in the kitchen, my mother, father, brother, and I. "I want my dinner," I announced from the high chair. Speaking was not easy yet. Words were slippery, swimming in the air like invisible fish, and I had to trap them with my mouth.
Before we talk about that, let's cue up the ride. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Long nights always bring me down. Do you agree? strange language coming in. I'd say roll up the windows if I didn't.
Was a beautiful song, and I don't know if it related at all to the piece that you read before that, which was the introduction to your book, Dragon at the End of a Bad World.
It could, but it hasn't until now. But the ride is sort of about some kind of departure, about kind of taking I guess they are related, because what I had in my mind with the ride was somebody taking a drive, kind of a final drive, almost maybe through their life or something. But the video is just a ride through the streets of New York at night. But I was thinking about death being kind of, like a ferryman who takes you over the River Styx, or like an Uber that you didn't order. And on the other hand, that passage, very short passage I read from the first part of the book, is about the beginning of my life. And one of the first images from my life, which was of a world disappearing, it was of our house burning down. And I kind of trace my interest in reconstructing episodes of my life and in kind of some sort of obsessive compulsion towards depicting my life to this early experience of having our house disappear and everything in it. And as I say later in the chapter, that it both obliterated and distilled an era for me. So it's I'm kind of just framing my relationship to memory and to document.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, the song is beautiful, but also just beginning to read your writing, it really pulled me in, this idea of also writing about the inability to talk. You know, it's such an odd beginning. You know, I mean, in the sense that's sort of what's impossible to articulate. You know, what we can't remember, right. But yet the way you write about it sounds like an experience I've had. I don't know if I have that memory or not, but it almost sounds like I do. It's kind of fascinatingly early to have a memory. And
I guess in the ride, too, there's a lot about it says strange language coming in, and it's the person's asking, why won't you speak to me, to the driver who's taking him around to, you know, the next life or whatever. So that, and I do notice that, I mean, I haven't thought about it that deeply or thoroughly, but in the book there is a lot of stuff about language and communication and, you know, kind of self-articulation, I would say.
And before we move on, the ride, the video that will most likely also be in the interview for people to see, the driver is Edgar Oliver, is that correct?
Yes, who called me earlier, actually.
Fate. Well, Edgar's in the middle of course of a 3-week of a run. I hope he's well. I saw his first two productions, and they were amazing.
Yeah, he's a really incredible writer and performer, and just one of my favorite people and artists. And I'm going to thankfully be able to go to sneak in and see him later this week. The show that I hadn't seen yet. which is his most recent, called Attorney Street. Right. I would plug it on the air here, but I think it's like wildly sold out. So there's no use.
I think it is too. The New Yorker gave it a rave review, and so did Time. So yeah.
They should
definitely know of Edgar Oliver and his work, because it's. I feel the same way. It's one of my favorite artists now. I just think it's an incredible pleasure to watch him and listen to him. So to move on, let's talk about there's two other. I wanted to play a little bit from Strangers from the Internet, another song, and then perhaps before we talk about that, we'll go in the opposite order. We'll read something after that.
Okay, sure.
So we're queuing up Strangers from the Internet, another song.
The strangers from the Internet are standing outside. The strangers from the Internet have come from far and wide. But I cannot receive them, I hardly believe in them. The strangers from the Internet are standing outside. The strangers from the Internet have come from far and wide. But I cannot receive them, I hardly believe in them. The strangers from the Internet are coming, I must hide. Maybe I'll hide over here, over there.
Let us see.
Over here.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about Strangers from the Internet, which we just heard.
I've just released the video for that this past week. So that's my most recent video piece, and it's kind of a follow-up in a way to my Shroom aria video, which, you know, is an Italian aria about a bad and somewhat accidental shroom trip I experienced years before. And in the course of that narrative, I lament that I had invited many strangers over from the Internet, you know, recklessly, but that no one came. And so in the spirit of operatic reckoning scenes, I wanted to envision, well, what if all these strangers did come to my house, but they were just like running late, like years late, and then they all arrived en masse to demand whatever it was that I had promised them. So it was, you know, kind of thinking about, like, you know, in Don Giovanni, he kills the commendatore at the beginning of the opera, and then at the end of the opera, the commendatore statue arrives to drag him down to hell, and to, you know, the earth cracks open and there's these flames and he drags Don Giovanni into hell. So I thought, you know, well, I don't have anything quite that dramatic going on in my life, but perhaps these strangers could come. And also in that, for that piece, which was arranged by a composer named Patrick Grant, he did these intricate, you know, orchestral arrangements. And then I solicited all actual strangers from the Internet through Craigslist and some other means, and everybody played their part alone at home, and then we put it together. So,
well, that's exciting and a really fascinating process too, to pull something like that together. So let's hear from the book now, which I'm very excited about and want people to find and buy if they can, because it's beautiful. I know it's not quite out yet, right? When is this book coming out?
Well, it's going to come out on November 20th, and in New York here, I'm going to have a launch this Sunday, the 19th, at the Howell Gallery.
So tell us something, please read something from the book.
Okay. So you I know you've interviewed Chavisa a couple times, Chavisa Woods, and it sounded like you might like to hear the beginning of, it's called Cat Antigone. My friend Chavisa's cat was kidnapped and became a celebrity. When you're famous for being gone, the world is suddenly chattering about you, but no one is sure whether to use past or present tense. Chavisa discovered soon enough that her companion was being held in an undisclosed location, so that much was settled. He was alive. He had been assigned a new name, like a true brainwashed hostage. The cat's picture was in the papers, while his captor was unknown. This was to become a drama of visibility. Rescuing him would not be easy. But let's back up and also zoom forward. Chavisa imparted to me the whole story of the cat, from the day she met him, through the abduction, to the years that followed. We sat at her kitchen table as she puffed cigarette after cigarette. I remember the story well enough, and I'll tell it to you now. If you'd like to imagine that she's telling the story herself, well, go right ahead and picture her. Like a character played by a young and plucky Shirley MacLaine, blades of orange hair on her head, laughing at high decibels, crying once in a while, too, and who could blame her? The cat was dead now. She'd just buried him yesterday. His dander was still hanging in the air. I don't know if you're allergic. Anyway, you'll be breathing a lot of secondhand smoke. And then it goes into this, you know, quote-unquote Chavisa's voice. So I kind of... You know, it's almost like the Gothic tradition of some narrator setting up a different narrator, you know. And so then I
love that. So there's also, I mean, it's very interesting because, as you said before the interview, I have interviewed Chavisa twice and read her book as well, her recent book, What to Do When
Things
You're Goth
to do
in the
when
Country.
You're goth in the country.
Things to Do When You're Goth in the Country, right? And and this is also, so this piece, this text is also about your dialogue with Chavisa also as a writer, it feels like, as an artist, like in part about the relationship that you have.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Chavisa and I, you know, are very, very close friends. And we, you know, we talk every day, and we're very kindred spirits, although, you know, different artists, but we have things in common too. But I don't know. I wanted to. A lot of these things in my book are kind of portraits of people I know, or people I'm close to, or people I've encountered, and. So this is somehow a little portrait of Chavisa, but it's also about this fascinating saga of her cat, who ended up in the New York Times and in the Daily News and all this stuff when a mysterious lawyer took him. His name was Oliver, renamed him Gatsby, and was refusing to give him back. And so there's a lot of, you know, different class dynamics that come up in the book, and all swirling around this cat. I mean, with the, almost, you know, if it would be like too obvious to invent, you know, that transition from, you know, like Dickens Oliver to Gatsby, but that's how it played out in real life.
Well, I wish you, you know, great luck with this book. I just find it beautiful, and I've read it to a lot of people myself. So,
thanks.
I'm so glad you wrote it. It's beautiful writing, and I wanted to ask before we go what you're reading now. Could be anything off topic, but is there a book or books you're reading that you want to mention?
Well, while I've been on the road this past couple of weeks, I have not been able to do much reading, writing, or thinking. But I've been trying to catch up. I've been tending towards more classical stuff. You know, so I just finished Petronius' Satyricon, which I had never read, and it was fantastic. And then I read Huysmans, Against Nature. I've started Marguerite Yourcenar's Memoirs of Hadrian now, and the only contemporary thing that I'm reading is a new kind of novel / memoir / Kathy Acker cannibal impromptu by Olivia Lang, the writer who wrote this kind of autobiographical novel thing just straight through, in a short period of time, and it's going to be published unedited in the spring. And so it's really good too.
Well, Joseph, I want to thank you for talking with me today and sharing your work with me.
Okay, thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.